ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, नमो भगवते। वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भगवद गीता चैप्टर 13 टेक्स्ट 6 एंड 7। I'll read line by line. You can kindly recite after me. Mahabhutani ahankaro buddhir avyaktam evacha indriyani dasaikam cha pancha chedriya gochara चाद्वेष सुखं दुःखं संघातश्चेतन चेतनाधृति एतात् क्षेत्रं समासेन सविकारं उदारतम्। एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। द फाइव ग्रेट एलिमेंट्स, फॉल्स ईगो, इंटेलिजेंस, द अनमैनिफेस्टेड, द टेन सेंसेस एंड द माइंड, द फाइव सेंस ऑब्जेक्ट्स, डिजायर, हेट्रेड, हैप्पीनेस, डिस्ट्रेस, the aggregate, the life symptoms and conviction, all these are considered in summary to be the field of activities and its interactions. Purport. From all the authoritative statements of the great sages, the Vedic hymns and the aphorisms of the Vedanta Sutra, the components of this world can be understood as follows. First, there are earth, water, fire, air and ether. These are the five great elements, the Mahabhuta. Then there are false ego, intelligence and the unmanifested stage of the three modes of nature. Then there are five senses for acquiring knowledge, the eyes, ears, nose, tongue and the skin. Then five working senses, voice, legs, hands, anus and genitals. Then above the senses there is the mind, within which and which can be called the sense within. Therefore, including the mind, there are 11 senses altogether. Then there are five objects of the senses: smell, taste, form, touch and sound. Now the aggregate of these 24 elements is called the field of activity. If one makes an analytical study of these 24 subjects, then he can very well understand the field of activity. Then there are desire, hatred, happiness and distress, which are interactions, representation of the five great elements in the gross body. The living symptoms represented by the consciousness and the convictions are the manifestation of the subtle body, mind, ego and intelligence. These subtle elements are included within the field of activities. The five great elements are a gross representation of the false ego, which in turn represents the primal stage of the false ego, technically called materialistic conception or tamasa buddhi, intelligence in ignorance. This further represents the unmanifested stage of the three modes of material nature. The unmanifested modes of material nature are called pradana. One who desires to know the 24 elements in detail along with their interactions should study the philosophy in more detail. In Bhagavad Gita, a summary only is given. A body is a representation of all these factors, and there are changes of the body which are six in number. The body is born, it grows, it stays, it produces byproducts, then it begins to decay, and at last stage it vanishes. Therefore, the field is a non-permanent material thing. However, the kshetrajna, the knower of the field, its proprietor, is different. Om Hare Krishna. We'll welcome all of you all for the Bhagavad Gita class this evening. Today we're discussing a very interesting section of the Gita and a very relevant section for us in all our lives. So let's try to analyze and study this and see how this can actually be applied in our personal lives. This is the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, and interestingly, this is the third part of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is divided, is like a sandwich, where the first six chapters, there are totally 18 chapters of the Gita. The first six chapters of the Gita represent the first part of the sandwich. The middle portion, the 6th chapter to the 12th chapter, represent
the middle portion, which is the most important part of the sandwich. And the part which we are in, the 13th chapter till the end, the 18th chapter of the Gita represent the other part, the second half of the sandwich. So technically, we are actually in the first part of the third part. So now we may ask, when we read the purport, there is a lot of technical words involved. There is a lot of technical understanding of the different elements, the different concepts that I mentioned. How is it actually relevant to us in our lives? We are living, staying in this world, working or studying or whatever, doing so many occupational duties. How is this verse related to our life? We'll try to understand it. Krishna, in the last chapter of the Gita, the 12th chapter, he explains, he gives bhakti, that is devotional service, as the essence, as the most important principle of our lives, for our lives. He says, Tesham aham samudharta murti samsara sagara. He makes a promise that he will save his devotee from this world, which is called Mrityu Samsara Sagara. That means a world which is filled with birth and death. Now, how is Krishna going to actually save us? Is Krishna going to personally come here to deliver each of us? Of course he's going to come, but he's going to come in a different way. He comes in the form of the knowledge of the Gita. He comes in the form of his holy name. And he comes in the form of his representatives. So here, in this chapter of the Gita, which is known as the Nature, Enjoyer and Consciousness, Krishna is actually giving us an understanding or knowledge of how to get out of the material world. But before getting out of the material world, Krishna is giving us a detailed understanding of what the material world is made of. Right? And the other interesting part is that when we said Bhagavad Gita is made up of three sections. The first section talks about karma. The middle section talks about bhakti. And this section, that is the third section, talks about jnana, that is knowledge. So, obviously, bhakti is the most important part. So, Krishna has preserved it in the middle. And also, there is another reason why Krishna has put bhakti in the middle and jnana and karma on both sides. Generally, people think that karma yoga is what Krishna is representing, is wanting to teach us through the Bhagavad Gita. Many people quote, you know, karmani vadikaraste, you know, it's very famous in India at least. Work is worship. But then, Krishna has something else to say. Definitely work is important. That's why Krishna gives the priority of teaching it first to Arjuna. But then he introduces a higher concept of bhakti in the middle. And then he introduces the concept of knowledge, jnana. What he tries to do is he tries to make a necklace where one part of the necklace is jnana, that is knowledge about Krishna and about the material world. The other part of the necklace is karma, that is action in the material world. And the pendant or the diamond, which is the most important part of the necklace, is bhakti, is right in the middle. So Krishna designs the Bhagavad Gita like that. So now, just a brief analysis of this verse. Little technical, but it's very interesting. And I'll try to present it in the way we understand it and apply it in our lives. You have to be a little imaginative for this. What is the difference between science and the Gita? Because science also teaches us about the different elements, the gross elements, you know, so many elements science is teaching us about. Biology, you know, or botany, zoology, or physics, so many things dealing with elements. And now Bhagavad Gita is dealing with elements. So what's the difference? The difference is that in the depth of understanding of these different elements. Like if you see in science, I wanted to explain this concept in the form of these different circles. The first circle, the innermost circle, is the circle of the senses or the gross elements, which is earth, water, fire, air, ether, and and our senses. Basically, this is what is taught through biology, physics, chemistry, and all these sciences. Nothing more. That's about the senses. But then there is a higher science or a higher understanding, which is the understanding of the level of the mind, which science deals in terms of psychology. There is a field called psychology which deals with mind. But then there is something higher called metaphysics, which deals with intelligence, with understanding of intelligence. But metaphysics is a very, very less explored subject today. Hardly anything is known about it. But then, this is where science stops progressing. And this is where Bhagavad Gita goes deeper. Because Bhagavad Gita, after the level of intelligence, deals with the level of the ego, which is even tougher to handle, and which is even a greater science. And then, not only that, Krishna takes it one level further, and he deals with the level of the soul, which is the highest. And actually, if you analyze it in a different way, also it's very, very significant. Even in the levels of happiness, different people experience happiness at different levels. All of us, of course, obviously are searching for eternal happiness. Is there anybody in this room who is not wanting to be happy? I mean, I'm sure there's nobody. But then, the manner or the way in which we seek this happiness is different according to our level of understanding or our level of knowledge. So, most people try to explore happiness at the level of the senses, which is very, very, very superficial and very, very small, which of course even the animals can experience. But then, this is technically called Annamaya Kosh or Pranamaya Kosh. These are two terms. Annamaya Kosh means you are experiencing happiness by food. Many people become happy if they get good varieties of food, right? So for them, their experience of happiness is if they get a great variety of food to eat. That's their level of happiness. That shows the level of consciousness also. But then that's not the highest level of happiness. There is even higher. At the level of the pranamaya, that is at the level of the existence of life airs. But then a greater level of happiness is at the level of the mind, which is experienced by people who like to use their mind in different ways to analyze things. That is called Jnanamaya Kosh. And a greater level of happiness is at the level of the intelligence, where the scientific community especially, trying to invent new things, trying to use their intelligence to, you know, churn out different subject matters. That is called Vijnanamaya Kosh. But again, science ends here. So, Bhagavad Gita and the scriptures give us a greater experience of happiness, which is eternal and which is actually something that will actually touch our hearts, touch our souls. That is called Anandamaya Kosh. And interestingly, I told you that each of these levels are circles, you know. So one circle which represents the science of understanding the senses, which is a circle. Circle means complete. So whatever knowledge is within that circle is complete knowledge. So that means there is a possibility that you can get complete understanding of this world. And even at the level of the mind, it is possible. That's again a circle. That means it is possible to understand the mind completely. And a greater circle is the circle of the intelligence. It is possible to even understand everything about the intelligence. Very tough, but it is possible. And it is even possible to understand things at the level of the ego. Very, very tough, but it is possible. But then the highest level, that is the level of the soul, which is the experience of Anandamaya happiness, doesn't have a circle. That means it has a beginning, but it never has an end. So the experience, you can have it, but you cannot reach the end of the understanding because it's unlimited, because it's Krishna. So that is something about what we dealt with. And of course, if anybody wants to experience this level of happiness we're talking about, especially the one that we're talking about, the highest, that is Anandamaya Kosh, which is of course eternal and which is what we're seeking for. So he has to have some access to somebody who has that experience, who has that happiness. I can't give you something which I don't have. And God is that only person who can give us that happiness. And he is the only one who can actually dare to venture where no human intelligence can. Because he's actually beyond the intelligence. And in fact, if you actually see, to venture beyond the intelligence and the ego, one has to actually be beyond these things. Just like, for example, I wanted to analyze this in a different way also, just to bring down this to becoming too technical. Let's come back to reality. So, the false ego is something which Krishna is talking about in this verse, which is something that we have to understand. Ego is not a very often used word in today's language, today's vocabulary. Because it's something that is associated with something that really hurts, it pinches, it touches. But the fact is that the Gita tells us that the ego, the false ego, is the thing that actually binds us to this world. It's actually like a rope. Just like if you have two ropes and you tie them up together. The knot which ties up the two ropes is something that is representative of the false ego in this world. What Krishna does is something very interesting. He takes two ropes. One is a soul which is having a desire to enjoy, and he takes the material world, material nature, and he ties them up together with a knot of the false ego. So now, people think that this world is a great experience because they are bound by this, by the shackles of this ego. Bound by ego. So this ego, it actually gives an experience of joy in this world. Like for example, let's analyze this. Nowadays there are theaters which are, you know, which portray 3D movies. So when you go into the theater, they give you goggles. You wear the goggles and you enter the theater and sit. And the movie begins. And the interesting part, the difference between other theaters and this theater is that it's 3D. 3D means the third dimension, it actually comes, the pictures actually come in front. Come and, you know, actually, you can see them very close. You can see them live, you know. So that's illusion. It's not that they are actually live. They are in the form of a picture only. But then the illusory effect is created that it's live. And nowadays there is a fourth level. Nowadays there are movies which are made in fourth dimension. Which not only you can feel it, you can see it coming live, but you can actually feel the experience. Like some children are telling us, I've not seen it, but somebody was telling us this. That for example, if you are in a SL world, or if in the movie, you know, somebody is swimming in the water and splashes. You can, if you sit in this theater with 4D movies going on, you can actually experience the water splashing. You know, that means you can get droplets of on your senses, on your fingers, you know. So is it actually there? It's not there. It's just an illusion. But then you feel it's so real because you've been tied up. You've been hooked. Of course, this is just an example. But the fact is that we are really hooked into this material world. We are really put into some kind of an illusory effect. Hypnotized. There's a nice story. We'll make it understand this better.